A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past. A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Gordon dives, and yes, he made that catch. A tremendous catch that robbed Chicago of two runs by the Gold Glover Alex Gordon.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future. This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I'm Troy Olson. I am joined by Michael Engel. And then Jeff Hur is somewhere. We will find him at some point, I'm sure.
He's out there.
We have confirmed he has not killed himself after this last three games by KU, but we'll see what happens against K-State tonight. Might have to put out an APB on both of them by then. So it is about 6:40 on a February 11th, 2013, which makes it a Monday. I've been having a case of the Mondays today. I couldn't remember what day it was. And we're gonna record a little episode here and try to get as much of it in as we can before the KU game starts so that Mike can go away and watch KU play K-State. And if you could see me right now, Mike, you would see me patting myself on the back, because about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I said that towards the end of one of the episodes that KU would fall asleep and be eliminated in the second round. Now, I had it wrong. They fell asleep much earlier than
this. This isn't asleep. This is comatose. This is
during that debacle that was the TCU game, not even going to call it a game, that mess that was TCU, I tweeted out, KU, I said you were going to get eliminated in the second round, but you didn't need to prove me right this way. And one guy accused me of cursing the team, and TJ Sports said, he goes, I'm really starting to believe. I said, I didn't want to be right. And he said, you were spot on, though, that you said that they would fall asleep at the wheel. I said, they're not even asleep at the wheel. They're dead. You know, I don't know. I'm not a KU fan. I always say that. I like Bill Self, but I'm a fan of good basketball, and that has not come out of KU.
Well, no, they have not been playing good basketball. It's so bad.
I mean, the writing was on the wall with the Iowa State game and some of the other games that they played teams way too close.
It's been all year. I mean, and it's starting to come to, you know, it shows their vulnerability. They've got no point guard. And that was early on. You could tell that Elijah Johnson was having some trouble running the offense. And I don't know. Can we talk about something else?
Yes, we can. I just wanted to bring that up for a second. I'm sure nobody that listens to this show really wanted to.
This is painful.
Well, I shouldn't say that. Most people listen to us for baseball. Let's get back to baseball. But as Clint over at Pine Tar Press says, he has to catch himself because he finds himself covering all the sports like Casey Royal, man. You know, I don't know how we got looped into that. They were talking about NBA. I don't know if we've ever talked about NBA on this show. I suppose we have at some point, but
I don't want to talk about the NBA on any show ever. So
yeah,
we're good there.
It's definitely not one of our favorites.
NBA is boring. But you know what's not boring? Spring training.
Yes, today catchers and pitchers reported, and that is an exciting time if you're a baseball fan. And apparently it's a time to be very depressed if you're a Royals fan. Everybody's already
– a lot of it we're getting – I mean, it's spring training for us too. I mean, we've got to get the snark, you know, warmed up. We got to make sure that, you know, we're you know, sniping at each other at a proper timing and everything. We got to get our game together too. So that's kind of – I think it's just a lot of a long, cold winter. People build it up. Finally, you know, there's some glimmer of activity, and we want to, you know, get all of our thoughts out there all at once. And Twitter was a lot more active today than it was in the last few weeks. I will say that much.
I got into the craziest conversation with Clint and a couple others about if there's such a thing as a star and superstar, or is there just stars, and is there only five of them in baseball, and it was all sorts of craziness today. All the while I was trying to work and really didn't want to – I wanted out of that conversation like four times, and then Clint would say something, and I couldn't help myself. I think I'm just excited to talk baseball again.
I think that's what
On the subject of talking baseball, there is actually some relevant spring training baseball. As we said, spring training open. Sal Perez is set to catch James Shields. James Shields said in an interview on 610 that he absolutely loves working with Sal, that he's smart and everything else. And there's a photo that Dutton has of Shields crouching and telling Sal where he likes it. By the way, if you didn't hear it, Bob Dutton was on the show last week. Check that out if you haven't already.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think about what does the combination of Sal and Shields bring? Is it, do you think either player is better because of the other?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it can hurt, and especially being, you know, right away, that having these two work together. I wrote a little bit last night, and it was kind of a stream of consciousness. You know, Shields has been in the Rays organization since he was 18 years old, and he's 31 now, so almost, you know, not quite half his life, but about 40% of his life he's been a Tampa Bay Ray. So now he's got to adjust to a completely new setting, completely new coaching staff, new people, you know, that he hasn't worked with ever, you know, with the exception of, like, Dave Island. 1 year he was an assistant with the Rays. So, yeah, I mean, getting those guys together now, it absolutely can't hurt. And I kind of like seeing, you know, that photo that Dutton put out there of Shields kind of showing Sal where he wants his target set and things like that, you know, because that's just getting familiar right away. The first day that Shields was there, Sal, his workouts were done, but he stuck around late just to catch with Shields. So, you know, maybe that's normal and we're picking it out now because it's being pointed out, but it could just be, you know, these two know that they want to get on the same page right away, because they're both very important to the success of this team this season and next season too.
Well, and here's a thought. Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Brian Peña catch Bruce Chen for the most part last season?
I think so, yeah. For the most, so it sounds right.
This would be the most veteran person that Sal has ever caught. Most of the people that he's caught, if you look at it, have been, I mean, I guess, I think he caught Hochaver. So Hochaver's a veteran, but, I mean, he's Hochaver, so I don't, yeah. So he doesn't really bring a lot to the table necessarily. But otherwise, you know, Sal's been catching the kids. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how this relationship works out. And, you know, is there, James Shields doesn't seem like he's the type to have a real big ego.
No.
So, you know, but it's going to be interesting to see how it works out as far as like one waving off the other or whatever, because Sal is not a veteran catcher by any stretch of the imagination.
Nope.
I mean, he doesn't even have a full season of games in yet.
Nope.
So
no, I think you're right on Shields being, you know, he's got just a good reputation of being one of those guys in California guy. When we were talking to Danny Duffy, you know, that's kind of what he was saying about Shields, you know, really excited to work with him and talk to him and everything, because they're both California guys and they're both pretty laid back. That's just kind of how he seems to be. And I think Sal probably would have caught Guthrie a few times last year late, but, you know,
still, you're right. He would have.
Yeah. I mean, but still, you know, he hasn't been around a long time, and having another veteran around, and especially a guy who's going to lead the staff, you know, kind of get everything together. And those two can lead, you know, the pitching staff. And I think that's a good combination. And getting together now, it can't hurt. There's absolutely no way it hurts. We mentioned Duffy, and, you know, Duffy is going to be thrown off the mound on Tuesday. So probably around the time that we get this out to the masses, you'll be listening to this probably about the same time that Duffy is taking his first throws off a mound since his Tommy John surgery. He was on Twitter earlier today and praised James Shields as well. He called him the best teammate I'll ever have. So those two are you know, like peas and carrots already. So that's cool. Side note to that, Joaquin Soria is also going to be thrown off a mound with in the same facility with the Rangers. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, nice to kind of peek in on him and see how he's doing. It seems like he's a little behind if he's only now throwing off a mound, but that could be due to this being his second Tommy John. I'm not sure. I don't know how much the timetable changes for a second Tommy John, but, you know, Duffy getting to throw, maybe that does move up his timetable. They're only going to throw about 20 pitches from what Bob Dutton said, and I can't imagine that's going to be a lot that they're going to. I don't think they're going to expand upon that workload too much. I don't see that they're going to try to push him right away. So, you know, it's about 20 pitches, and you get a chance to see how he feels, and I'm sure he's going to be on Twitter kind of telling people, you know, how it went and how he felt, and hopefully there's no setback. I can't imagine he's going to be going full strength yet. I think it's just going to be soft toss. But it's good to see.
And then one of the big talking points on Twitter today, as we'd mentioned, oh, by the way, on the Duffy thing, he did praise Shields on our show as well. We had him on just a couple weeks ago. You can still find that at kingsofkaufman.com/podcast, royalmanreport.com. Look, and you'll see it in the spinner. I don't know if Mike has the archive up for that one yet or not.
Of course I don't.
Fesco says that the Royals had a choice of Myers or Sal to trade to get their big starting pitcher targets, and Twitter explodes with the flag carrier being Kevin Scobie. He is just enraged that they would trade Myers instead of Sal because Myers has so much potential. We love potential in Kansas City. What do you think, Mike?
Well, up until 2011, Sal Perez wasn't really anybody that they were seeing as a cornerstone. Now, he made great strides in that season to not only improve defensively, but he also hit the ball really well. So, you know, he advanced really quickly to be on everybody's radar. Myers, though, I mean, Myers was a top five prospect, and at every point he should have been a first round pick in 2009. He wasn't because everybody assumed he was going to be going to North Carolina. The Royals paid him $2 million to give up his scholarship. He started out, he hit every single thing in the rookie leagues. He came in 2010, hit everything in both levels of A ball. 2011, you know, he dealt with those injuries, but he was still hitting okay. And then 2012, he blew up, and at no point was he any lower than third or fourth on anybody's prospect list. You know, and that's where you kind of get into where the scouting reports are to where, you know, what that upside is going to be down the road. And people just weren't seeing it from Sal Perez. Then when you start talking about, you know, this potential trade or this choice that the Royals had, I didn't see who Fesco was talking to when he got that information, or if it was on the show or what. But you know, when you look at position scarcity, if Sal Perez is who the Royals think he's going to be, that's a really valuable guy who could hit 15 homers, hit about 270, and play really, really good defense, plus, you know, the leadership, if you want to chip that in there. That's a really good player, and you know, I think they're both extremely valuable. I don't think anybody would have been happy if they'd have traded Salvador Perez. Now, given his contract, I think that changes things a lot also, because he's with options, he could be under contract through 2019. So you're locking up his peak years. And if he's the guy you think he is, I mean, that's a significant guy. So I don't know. I mean, I think it comes down to the whole prospects discussion. You know, Myers has always been a top prospect at every level by just about every source out there. And Perez just hasn't. And that's kind of what the root of it is. Now, Sal's done very well at the major league level, but, you know, it's a couple months here and then it's a couple months last year. So he's not a lock either. So they're both still guys with potential. They could, you know, Perez doesn't get on base. He doesn't take walks. Could absolutely regress to being a 250 guy who doesn't have the power that he showed last year. It's entirely possible. It's possible that Will Myers is Ben Grieve, but it's also possible that Will Myers is a slightly older Mike Trout without the speed.
And welcome to the show, Jeff Hurd. Jeff, how you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing all right.
You sound like you're doing all right.
Just a little stressed out, and my cat is annoying me.
That's okay. You missed out on the cat annoying me earlier on today, so that part was on the front of the show. I think that about covers the Royals news for right now. I think we're going to take a quick break right here, and I'm going to look up a phone number, and we're going to have our guest. I don't think I announced who our guest was today. We're going to be joined here in just a couple of minutes by the one, the only, the Wonder Dog, That is Rex Hudler, and I am very excited about this interview. I am going to grab that phone number. We're going to give him a call, but I think we got to pump up for this one. You know, you got to get excited.
I got to take my 5-hour energy.
He's going to bring the energy, so you got to be ready to match him for.
I'm going to take 6 5-hour energies.
it's about right.
I'm gonna be bouncing.
You're going to hear a break, but when we come back, you're probably going to hear. It may be, and if it's anything like when he was on Pine Tar Press, it could be an awkward transition. Actually, really quick, let me mention that too. For those of you that have been following us for 2 years, about a year and a half ago, we made a move from a podcasting service, I don't even remember, to Podomatic. In September, we're going to be moving away from them as well. So however you're listening to us, be it through Podomatic or any way other than through echonetwork.com or kingsofkaufman.com/podcast, because those two will still be fine. You can still use RSS feeds off them, and you should be fine. But we're combining forces with the Pine Tar Press podcast, making royalspodcast.com. Think of it as a syndication. The show is still independent. It's still involved with Echo Network. It's still involved with Kings of Kaufman, as it always has been. But we're making a move to have one stream between the Pine Tar Press podcast and the Kansas City Baseball Vault. It's going to be better for both of our shows. It's going to be better for you, the listener. It's going to get you a wider berth of guests. We're going to make sure that we're not, you know, so that earlier this year, I think Jason Parks was on with the two shows in a turn of 2 weeks. Same with JJ Cooper. So we're going to work this coming year on doing either roundtable podcasts on those kind of names if we're getting them at the same time, or spreading them out for you to keep getting high quality guests through the whole birth of it. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come right back. If it sounds like it's an awkward entry, it probably is because it's with Rex Hudler. So we'll be right back on the other side.
This is the Echo Network, the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I am Troy Olson. I'm joined by Michael Engel and Jeff Herb. We're very excited today because we're going to be joined by Rob Nyer, Danny Duffy, Joel Goldberg, Bob Dutton.
Budcast Podcast.
Best Bud City.
Well, 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 well.
Welcome. I'm Vladimir. All cool guys, watch Pee-Pee Boy Rump Rangers.
Every Wednesday at 4.
It's time for The Ball Game, sponsored by the Kansas City Baseball Historical Society, with Jeff Logan, Chris Kamler, and 1985 World Series champion Greg Pryor.
The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Join baseball's best Wednesdays from 4 to 5 on
The Ball Game on ESPN 1510 AM. This is the Echo Network.
I guess it's echonetwork.com. If I ever get the website right, we'll be doing great. For nearly 2 years, the Royal Man Report and Kansas City Baseball Vault have brought you the fans' perspective on Royals baseball. You've joined us for nearly 2 years at kingsofkaufman.com/podcast or royalmanreport.com. Come celebrate at Kelly's Westport Inn on February 23rd, 2013, as we celebrate 2 great years of guests, Royals talk, and analysis with you, our fans. Party starts at 7, free cover before 10. See you there.
Oh, man, let's go.
Okay.
I'm good.
All right. So we're joined here on the Kansas City Baseball Vault by Rex Hudler, and Rex is, of course, the color commentator for the Kansas City Royals. He came in last year, and it's definitely a polarizing figure. Rex, you know, you've talked about on 610. You have a great segment, by the way, with Danny Parkins and Carrington Harrison. A lot of people on Twitter are involved when you're on that show. They're really into what you're talking about. They really enjoy it. And you talked last week about how last year was, we'll say, an interesting year for you. You know, obviously you're taking over for a hometown person, somebody that the people loved. You were kind of put in a rough situation, and your daughter, she had you look at some of the message boards and you saw some of the different things. Kind of take us through last year, like describe how you felt coming in and then kind of the middle of the year and the end. Did you feel like you accomplished what you wanted to last year?
Well, first of all, thank you for calling me and giving me an opportunity to share with the great fans there. Appreciate that. And I was just sharing with my wife about a year ago. We were coming here. We were excited about of course, every spring, you know, being a ball player that was blessed to play for 21 years and broadcast for another 15, you know, been having fun. I've been in the game for a long time. That optimism in spring training almost just bubbles over in me from a player standpoint, thinking about the possibilities, the opportunities to get to play in the big leagues, to get to play different positions, to get a chance to get exposed to cities that you go to, and then also to get a chance to win a championship. That was the ultimate as a player. As a broadcaster, I don't have to worry about that anymore because I'm not playing. It's so fun to come to the yard. It's unbelievable. And I was guarded as a player with my enthusiasm and my optimism when I got to the ballpark because, you know, you watch a lot more. I wasn't quite as huge a mouth as I am now. But once I changed over and went to the broadcasting side, that brought a whole different perspective out. That brought the real love of the game and the fact that I had the opportunity to share it with people was unbelievable. I was so thankful for a chance that, man, how many men would like to be able to do that? Or how many ex-ball players, big leaguers, would love a chance to be able to share that? There's only like 30, 35 jobs at the highest level in Major League Baseball. So I was honored. And so every day when you come to the park, no matter where your team is, in first place or last place, it's an exciting day to come to the yard. And so I had to learn how to harness that and contain that as a broadcaster for the 11 years with the Angels that I was with. And then now with the Royals, I was in a new market and had to really pull back. And so it's been good for me to take a few breaths and to be able to try to contain that energy and that passion. But it's there. It's fun. And I knew it would be a difficult transition. And, you know, the fans love Frank White. So do I. I was a fan of his. Man, I was a ball player. I was a big leaguer, a second baseman coming up behind Willie Randolph and the Yankees. And that's when the Royals were whipping the Yankees' tail. That's a beautiful thing. And you know what? Now that even though I played 7 years with the organization, I've been away from them and played for so many different, I played for five other organizations besides them after that. And then a year in Japan and broadcasted for a few. So look, I kind of like it when you whip the Yankees. It's pretty good. So I had respect for Frank. Split, absolutely loved him. So I knew coming in here what a coveted, hallowed job this was. It wasn't like I was some flighty dude just coming in going up. No, I have a lot of respect, a ton of respect for those who came before me in baseball that laid the trail for me, that allowed me to make $1 million sitting on the bench, being a big leaguer. And, I mean, I'm almost a little bit embarrassed to say that to the public. Gosh, but, you know, the authorities in Philly are looking for me. So when we go there the first week of the season for their opening day, I'm a little nervous about going in there because Terry Francona, heck, he paid me a lot of money to come there at the end of my career at 36, 37 years old. So I retired at 38. I'm a guy with perspective, passion, and love for the game and the people who participate in it and the people who watch it. So for me, God has me in a perfect place right now in my life with my four children, 24 years of marriage, and continue to try to fight off the curveballs that come in my life, which happen. I'm no different than anybody else. Fight the curves off, the nasty ones that you can't hit, and wait for the hanger and square it up, and then ride it to the gap and have some fun and enjoy yourself. That's the whole game of life, battling, fighting. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, and you know, and it was funny because we were all talking. It actually, I posted on a Facebook group that we're going to have you on today, and wanted some feedback from people what they wanted asked, and if anybody had some really good questions for you. And it just a lot of people kept coming back to that combination of questions that I just asked you. You know, what was it like taking over for Frank White? You know,
it was hard.
How do you
it
feel
was
about?
Really hard. Okay, yeah. Next question.
Yeah, you know, how have you handled becoming from being somebody that necessarily wasn't liked because of that into kind of being, like I said, a polarizing figure, somebody that a lot of
grown.
People like myself.
I've grown as a human being because of that. It was a great experience for me at 52 years old to be able to come into a place where I'm used to people knowing who you are and never played for the organization. It was a very unusual spot and a tough position to just, you'll never fill in and never replace a Frank White. Oh, you'll never replace Split. I love Split. His sense of humor was so great. Now, Frank, I got to know him the last couple of years personally, or the last few years when he was broadcasting with the Royals, because I was still with the Angels. But you don't replace those guys. And so, and for that, and in my style, and the fact that, you know, my family was gone, so I ate out my home meals, everything here in Kansas City, by myself. And so when I went places, I looked at people, and they looked at me and looked away. And when you love people, that was hard to take. Man, it was a humbling experience. I was humbled and molded. I was remolded into the Midwestern style of life, and a young teen that is on the rise in a perfect time for me to be here and to experience a win and a championship that's going to happen here in the near future.
And one of the things last year, I mean, there was a ton of optimism in Kansas City last season. What did you see in the clubhouse last year that you think will carry over this year as far as, you know, the camaraderie, the teamwork, the leadership, and then factoring in, you know, Jeremy Guthrie being here a full year, Sal Perez hopefully being healthy a full year, and James Shields coming over with a really good resume of both on the field and in the clubhouse? How's that all going to mesh together in 2013?
Oh, I remember the optimism last year. When I was due, I was kind of like a deer in headlights myself. You know, the early 12-game losing streak hurt a lot. That kind of took the wind out of the sails right away. But, you know, the optimism and being a professional athlete in baseball where you play it every single day, I knew how to wash the bat away that night in the shower and come back the next day and battle. It's a new day. So baseball's a grind, and these young kids had never been through the grind before. So I saw a lot of immature young players. First, second-year players is what we saw. But their upside is so high, they were able to compete at a level where, gosh, they weren't worst. We were middle of the pack. We were third place. That's respectable. For the age, the amount of time that these young Royals have had playing the grand game up here in the big leagues is something. They don't have much experience. So they were humbled, like I was as a broadcaster. Last year was my 12th or 13th year. You know, that was my 13th year in broadcasting. And so I was humbled last year. Baseball has a way of humbling you from day one to your 15th year in the majors. It is a humbling game, and these kids got a dose of humble pie last year. The Hosmers, Moose got a little bit at the end. He ran out of gas because it was his first full season in the big leagues. This guy, he found out what the extra 30 games was like, and, man, he hit the wall, and he didn't know. Next year, don't you think he'll be better that he experienced a full year in the majors?
Yep.
Yeah, you would think so. So that's definitely something we're looking forward to see. You know, you talked about a little bit that you've been in baseball and in professional baseball, be it the minors or majors, for 21 years. I mean, you're the absolute definition of somebody that really grinded out a career in baseball. You found a spot here and there, like you jokingly said, you stole money from the Phillies, but you were well known around baseball. I was trying to find some stuff on you, anything I could ask you about that isn't the norm, and I was going through YouTube, and there's a video out there of people doing impressions of you, and you, it was a video of you and from Courtside Tweets, and you were talking about what it's like to be a baseball player and stuff, and in there, there's Ozzie Smith and Doug Glanville doing impressions of you. What does it mean to you when people like Ozzie Smith have such love for you that they're doing these great impressions of you? I mean, Ozzie Smith's one of the greatest that ever played the game.
Wow, that's very humbling. But, you know, it's been a long career. Like I said, I'm really thankful. Every day I feel younger and fresher. I think that has a lot to do with, you know, my faith. I'm happy. I'm in a good point. But gosh, I got to tell you, that's very humbling to hear that. And I've always been, on the more enthusiastic, energetic side, because that was my genetics and that was my up, kind of the way I was raised. And my mom taught me to be positive. So really all your fans are hearing is real and it's passion. It's all the truth. But, when I got to the ball field after a 10 year minor league career, I thought I'd never have a career in baseball. I had a couple cups of coffee. I married my wife, and I got 10 straight years in the big leagues. I give her a lot of credit for that. And look, So every day when I came to the park, I was had perspective. And that's what a lot of people need to have in life now, perspective. Look where you are. It's okay. Be content with where you are and try to do something for the team that day, whether I rode the bench, rode the pine for nine, or whether I got a chance to play left field or second base in a game. I've got four ABs. I'm going to help my team win because that's what you're paid for as a professional, to win. Game's over. Went 5 for 5. Actually, only one time in my career I went 5 for 5. But I went in, had fun, we won the game, had a nice little fun time, and then got in the shower like I did every night, and I washed the results of that night down the drain. And sometimes I watched the suds go down the actual drain, and I waved to them saying, see ya, and I wouldn't want to be ya. Take that 0-4, you got to go. And you know what? That 5 for 5, you want to hang on to the next day. Or if you go deep, you get to see yourself on ESPN or one of the sports channels, you know, out there, the Fox or whoever. And the next day, you get to see it all the way up to the ballpark. But once you get to the game that next night, it's, what have you done for me lately? That's over. Yesterday's gone. It's time to go to work again. Just like people who pack a lunch pail and go to work and work hard 9 to 5 every day is just like the way I took it. I took it that way, and I knew it wouldn't last forever. And it was fun, and I enjoyed it. And that passion came out. I wasn't afraid to be myself after a few years in the majors. I started coming out and saying, by golly, I'm going to be myself and have fun. And that's what people hear now.
And Rex, you know, when one of the things that I've kind of really come to enjoy about you is some of it that you've kind of already talked about, and just kind of the general way about you that you're so passionate about it. And the thing that I think came across that might have caused people to kind of take a little bit to warm up to you is because I think it might have taken people a little while to realize how genuine you really are about all this stuff and how much you really enjoy the game and love being out there. And the thing I'm always curious about is you seem to have just one thing that another thing I can really appreciate is just such a great perspective about everything that you've already kind of talked about, whether it's life, whether it's baseball, how everything fits together. So as an employee of like Fox Sports versus directly employed by the Royals, when you come into a situation like last year where you see all these young guys and you're obviously going to have some sort of communication with them throughout the year, I mean, how much involvement do you really get a chance to have and go up to someone like Eric Hosmer last year and provide some perspective for him and things like that to actually get that opportunity to maybe help some of these kids when they have those struggles versus kind of having to keep that distance of being the broadcaster for the team?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, you know what? It all comes with people skills, you know, and you got to have them. And being in a clubhouse for all them years and being around people since I was 17 years old, and even before that, I played on some championship baseball, soccer teams, you know, as a youth. I loved my teammates, and as a player, got to know. But now, here I am, an old man, and these guys are old enough. I have an 18-year-old daughter. I mean, they're almost as, you know, old enough to be my kids. So I just was being myself. And that's the whole thing about it. Be yourself. I went to the ballpark. I was there early in spring training. I let them see me a little bit. Didn't hear a lot of me. Shook their hands. Just the surface stuff. And then once the season started, once the bell rang, I kind of just, you know, would be on the field and meet them on the field when they came out for batting practice. But I was there every day. On the road is easy. But at home, when normally, typically, my family was there, I didn't really want to get to the park until I had to because I wanted to pick up my kids from school and stuff. But since my family was not there last summer, I was able to go to the yard at 3 o'clock, which was really good. They're not on the field till 4. So I could unpack my stuff, go downstairs. Don't go in the clubhouse because I did that for so many years. And I remember looking at reporters and people who didn't belong in that clubhouse and go, hey, if you ain't got a story, get out. This is our house. and I remember being that way. So look, I didn't have to be in there. I didn't have a camera. My profession didn't take me in there. I had no business in there. So I would go on the field. and they would come out early. And I would see the first couple of guys that came out on the field. Usually it was Moose. And then Haas wasn't too far behind. And they brought that football, and he threw that football to warm up, to loosen up his arm. And he let me catch it a few times with him. And I told him, oh, by the way, young punk, I had 25 football scholarships and a full ride to Notre Dame to catch passes from Joe Montana. I can catch your pass, dude. I know you might have been a All-American quarterback or something like that in high school, but dude, you ain't got enough for me. Bring it.
Well, so I
got to hang with him. I was with him every day because my family wasn't there, so I was sold out to the team. And I love people so much, especially ball players. Without going overboard and giving them too much love on the air and stuff, because of my experience that I've had in it, but still being there with them and just being there every day and sitting there and letting them see I'm showing up every day to do my work. And I think that probably was a little bit of shock to some people who have been around for a while, because they know it's a lot of color commentators and television broadcasters. You know, they don't come on the field that often. They don't have to. You get all the news. You get everything. You can read everything about what's going on with the team. You know, Vin Scully, I mean, I would never go down if I was Vin Scully, but, you know, the players never see him. So for me to go down there and hang out with him, I mean, I like doing that. And then after a while, I would start telling my stories, and they would say, you know, but I'm telling stories. I'd be talking in that clubhouse, and next thing you know, I'd be talking to two guys, and then here come four or five, six others would come out and just start listening to the stories, because I was telling big game stories about Doc Gooden, Randy Johnson, all these guys, and having fun, and these young players were listening. And then I said, all right, fellas, go on Google and Google me, man. Look, I'm tired of this stuff. You need to know what I did. I did what you did, and I hope you guys can do what I did, play as long and get as much and have as much fun as I did. So they would come back to the ballpark the next day, and they would go, Hud, you ate an earthworm? You ate a June bug during your career? So they were reading all that stuff that's out there, and so it gave me a chance to tell some more stories and have some more fun and bonding. So the next thing you know, Hosmer starts calling me Uncle Hud. And Moose, I see him the next day, and he goes, hey, Uncle Hud, how you doing today? And so I cracked up, and they started calling me Uncle Hud, because you know how your uncle tell you stories, man. The older uncles usually sit down and tell some stories, and that's what I did. And I had fun with them. I'm not a coach. I'm not a with Ned's team. Like you said, I'm not with the Royals, but you know what, though? I had a chance to influence young people and share with them about the game and how hard it was, and to hang in there, dude. Everyone gets humbled pie in baseball as a player, for sure. Some get more than others. I got a whole pie. I ate the whole pie in 21 years, man. There was, unfortunately for me, it was tough. But some guys might get a sliver of a piece of pie or one or two pieces of pie, but you're going to get humbled. And so to show up every day and not be sitting on that bench, a couple of them guys would come out there shaking their heads, just like when they did as a player. I would go in that clubhouse and say, young man, why is your head down? You're one of 800 players in the world that get to play at this level, and you got beat last night? Is that what you're upset about? Look, let it go. You got beat by another professional, and it's time you let that go, because if you don't, you'll get mowed over again tonight, and you'll feel the same way tomorrow. So get over it, dude. And I would just keep moving on with my day. And these guys would look at me like, wow, okay, Hud, I hear you. And I wouldn't do it around people, because I'm not into, you know, making a scene and making me look like a big shot. I'm simply giving the young players and the young Royals a little extra, you know, that you know, even if they don't want it, by God, they're getting. But I don't wear them down to the point when they see me come and they hide, at least yet. But they might after a few more years. But I love them. I love them. And I talked to Ned. I said, Ned, do you mind if I encourage some of your guys? I'm not a coach. Don't want to be a manager. Don't care about any of that. Thankful being a broadcaster, sharing with the real people in the world about the grand game. I love that. That's what my passion is. So don't worry about me, trying to take anybody's job. I just want to do that. Do you mind if I encourage your players? And he goes, no, Hud, go ahead. So, you know, it's not like I'm some guy who never played before and I'm making that request. I played as long as Hall of Famers play. Of course, I couldn't get on the street of Cooperstown with my career. But it was humbling, and I learned a lot. And when you get humbled, like I did last year as a podcaster, you can't help but grow. You get better. And people are like that, too. I'm not the only one who this has happened to. People are humbled every day in the workplace, but they've got to understand that, look, you get humbled one day, but the next day, especially in baseball, you could be on top of the mountain. So it's beautiful, man. But you have to be looking for the top of the mountain, or you'll never get to it.
We're joined here by Rex Hudler, color commentator for the Kansas City Royals, and a guy that just brings a lot of energy. Again, thanks to David Leske for hooking me up with your information and making it so I could get a hold of you. And of course, thanks to you for coming on. When you were on the Pine Tar podcast, as I was listening to it, I actually sent a message privately to David, and I said, Dave, this guy, he just pumps me up. I said, I don't know if it's because I'm a Christian, and he's telling all these stories about how his religion has really helped him through everything and his problems at home and everything. And Dave goes, you know what? I'm a Jew, and I'm just as excited as you sound. And we were stoked. You know, we were so excited to hear your stories. And one that has really touched me on a very serious level, because I'm recently engaged. My fiance and I want to have children in the next couple of years after we get married. And one thing that we've actually talked about or wondered about is we're aiming for one child. And if we have a child, what if something's wrong? You know, what if that child has something that's wrong with him or her, or, you know, an example in your case is you have a child with Down syndrome or as you call it, Up syndrome. And I love that. It makes me so excited. And kind of for folks that maybe haven't heard you on the radio or they didn't hear your interview on Pine Tar Press, talk about your what you went through when you found out that you had a child with, as you call it, Up syndrome.
Well, you know, I appreciate your questions. You guys have great questions, and I know I'm a lot long on the answers, but I can't help it. It's fun to be able to share with you guys. Any person with ears that when I have time and they got time, man, it's fun to just share stuff if they're interested. But you use the word religion, and, you know, it's not my religion. It's my faith. It's my faith. I'm not a ritual guy like, you know, saying prayers and Hail Marys or whatever. You know, I'm a believer. I believe in the true Son of God, Jesus Christ, and I'm not afraid to say that. And I don't wear it on my sleeve like Tim Tebow and a few of these other athletes. I don't do that, and that's just not my preference. But I'm not afraid to when I have to, when I'm asked a question like this. But I have future. I have hope. It took me, I'm a human being too, but it took me some time. And my wife and I, when we took our son home, after we didn't have an amnio, we didn't have the test that you can tell what's, if there's any problems with the fetus, we didn't do that because we trusted that God was giving us what he made for us. So we had Cade, and he looked beautiful. He looked typical. He didn't have any kind of features that looked like Down syndrome or anything like it. And the only yellow flag that went up was when they took him from my wife. The nurse that had him took him on that hot tray, that little hot pad, whatever they put babies on there after they're born, and he didn't cry. And I had one child before him, and I remember how much they cry after they're taken from their mommy. And he didn't cry, so I was like, wow, that's unusual. But then I quickly turned my focus back to him, how beautiful he was, and so we took him home after a day or two. And then 3 days later, they called and said, hey, Mr. Hudler, you have a son that's tested positive for Down syndrome. I went, oh, really? Well, that's how we found out. And we found out, maybe some people might say, wow, that was a tough way to find out over the phone. But that's how I was supposed to find that out. And then I took it from there. And my wife and I, Jennifer, we grieved because a friend of mine, Tim Burke, who is a reliever for the Expos and a teammate of mine, had adopted kids with disabilities. One of his children became mentally disabled after a heart procedure, and so he had an idea about what it was like. So I had to call somebody. I had to call somebody that knew. I called Berkey up. I said, Berkey, it's HUD. Hey, we just found out, Jennifer and I, that we had a child with Down syndrome, and I need some advice. What do you think? And what can you tell me? And he said, HUD, wow, that was tough when our child had a problem. And I never came to grips with it, and I never addressed it, and never grieved, and I just didn't believe it was going to happen. I couldn't believe it was happening. And my wife couldn't understand it came between our marriage. You need to grieve. I said, what? I'm happy. My son's healthy. He's not, there's nothing about, all we prayed for was a healthy child. He's okay. He's healthy. He just has Down syndrome. He has an extra chromosome. He's born like that. And so he said, I don't care, HUD. It's still not the guy that you were thinking was coming out, was it? And I said, no, you know what? I was expecting a young George Brett to come out, really. I was hopeful. And I was expecting a big leaguer. And by golly, I had to change my dreams. So I did. I took that advice. I grieved with my wife because we had to change the dreams that we had of the typical child. We weren't grieving over the fact that we had a child with Down syndrome. We were grieving the child that we expected. And so it took a while, a little bit of time, and by golly, a guy named Jim Abbott, as I started going back to the gym, working out, I just come off my best season in my career with the Angels, and I go back to the gym, and Jim Abbott was there and said, hey, HUD, look, miracles can happen. Hang with your son, Cade. You and Jennifer will help him reach his full potential, man. Just go for it. Don't worry. Miracles can happen. Stay with him. And that encouraged me, and it woke me up, and it said, wow, okay, it's time to come out of my little depression of grieving, and it's time to take him, accept him, and move forward. And as I did, God said, he told me through the Holy Spirit of my heart, hey, look, but I gave you the child to enhance your life. I didn't give him to you to bring your life down. So take him like you would anything else that you're given, a gift. Take him like you would. Open your hands and take him. Because he's going to enhance your life. And so that made it ever since then. Now, it hasn't been easy at all. Having a child with a disability can be challenging, for sure. But the unconditional love and the disability that God happened to pick out for our family, Down syndrome, and I call it up syndrome because they're not down, is a huge blessing, because there's a lot of other disabilities out there that are very challenging for families, communities, schools, everything. It's unbelievable, but you know what? There's a place for them, and they're here for a reason. And by golly, we like to share Cade, our son, and all kids like him, and then continue to lift that up, and that's what we do, and we'll do that here in Kansas City as well, and that's to share and tell the parents that it's okay to have a child with a disability. It's okay. It's okay. Hang in there, and we'll help you through it if we can.
Well, the story to me is just so special, because I know that if a couple of years from now when we have a child, if anything like that happens, I just feel like listening
you
to your stories
me.
About it, it would help me.
You call me, and I'll be happy to put my wife on with your wife, and we do a lot of that right now, and I'll tell you, nowadays you can find out, you know, way before you should know about the health of the child, what if you have a child with a disability. But if you do find out that you have a child with up syndrome or Down syndrome, the world calls it, please have that baby. Please have that child. Go ahead and go through the delivery and everything. And if you can't raise it, at least there's a lot of people in line to adopt children, and especially kids like that. You'd be surprised, because people know. They know the unconditional love that's given every day by a child like that, and that it's welcomed in families that are looking for love. So look, that's my new mission, is to encourage parents that are expecting a child with Down syndrome to continue to have the child in it and give it up for adoption. Don't terminate the pregnancy, please. These children have a lot to give and a lot to offer. And that's spoken from a dad with a 16-year-old son that's gone through just about everything you can go through outside of the health we were blessed with at birth. He didn't have any problems, any holes in his heart, or anything that had you know, parents go through with surgery. So we're very blessed and very excited to share.
Well, I'll say no matter what, we'll have the child. If we're graced enough to be able to have a child, we're going to have it regardless, and we're going to deal with whatever it gives us. I think we've been on the phone with about 30 minutes with Rex Hudler, and a big thank you to Rex. He takes time out of his personal day. You know, like he said, he enjoys talking to the fans and what have you, but he didn't have to come on with us today, and so we really appreciate having Rex on. Jeff, Mike, did you guys have anything else for Rex?
Well, I do have one thing, and I know that your daughter is here at KU now. I live in Lawrence. I work on campus. Big KU basketball fan. Who do you have tonight?
Oh, man, I can't wait till that game comes on. Well, you know what, being a brand-new KU father,
yep.
I mean, who's going to root for K-State? I mean, come on.
Exactly.
Look, my partner, Steve Fisiok, I love him.
He's
a great guy. He's a K-State dude. But hang with them, Fizz. Rock, Chalk, Jayhawk, man. They're in trouble. They're hungry tonight. They're coming into their house. If they don't blow them out by 15 or 20, I'm through with them.
Yeah, I'm feeling
so. So, Rex, we actually have a favor to ask of you, if you could, really quick. We got a really good friend. His name's Brian McGann, and he's a big KU fan. And could you give a Rock Chalk shout out to our friend Brian McGann?
Brian, I know he's probably setting this up right here for something else, but Rock Chalk Jayhawk. Man, I'll tell you. KU.
And you're definitely onto my scheme. Brian's a huge Mizzou fan, but
look,
Brian,
and I'm going to be careful. I'm going to be careful though this summer, because now look, where I've been the last 13 years is because where my job was. I wasn't necessarily that I wanted to live there, but it was Southern California, and then the rivalry there, UCLA, USC, same thing, but not the same passion, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
This year when I came here and I mentioned my daughter going to KU, man, I thought that was going to be something that people would be happy for and proud for. I got hammered because of Mizzou and K-State and all these other schools. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I love the passion here. Won't it be fun when our Royals win again and this new generation of people will see the passion at the ballpark? I can't wait, guys. And look, I saw it last year three times for sure. It stuck out. The beginning of the season, at the end of the 12-game losing streak when we made that out, when Moose threw out A-Rod, I heard a roar and it was beautiful. And in the All-Star game when they boot Cano, I didn't let him hit it. One home run was beautiful. I heard that too. And number three, when Miguel Cabrera stepped to the box at the K to hit for a triple crown the first time in 45 years in the grand game, the 12,000 walk-up people from the K, the great fans here in Kansas City, oh, I was so proud. Goosebumps went down my back as they cheered on Miguel Cabrera. He tipped his hat, and when they took him out of the game in the fifth inning, the crowd gave him another standing O. Gosh, I can't be more proud, but you know what? Those are signs that, having been around like I've been around, that I like, and I can't wait to see that turn towards their team and get behind them, and hopefully they'll do it. But it's got to be done day to day, and we can talk all we want about the preseason and everything and what's going to happen, but until they go out and execute between the white lines, we just won't know.
Well, and thank you again for coming on, and just to the McGannon brothers, Kevin and Brian, are both really big fans of yours, and Kevin definitely was involved in the conversation that we were having on Facebook on that group I was talking about, and Brian said at one point on Twitter, he said, if you don't like Rex, I just don't have time for you. And so big fans of yours. You got a lot of people that are backing up.
Great. I'm so happy to hear that. You know, my wife every once in a while goes, you need people to tell you how great you are. No, I don't. Certain times, maybe in my day, I might, like everybody else. But look, you can't please everybody. There's no way, man, you can't do it. So look, I just am very grateful and continue to be myself and understand the fact how I could get on certain people's nerves, and my wife included, but by golly, she's lived with me for 24 years, and so I'm pretty pumped about that. And I'm thrilled about talking about a winning team, and that's what we're looking forward to here. And I have the same optimism everybody else has here, and by golly, everyone's in first place now.
true.
So why shouldn't we be optimistic, and especially the fact that ownership kept their word, and they said we're going to do it, and they did it. They got four starters before the turn of the new year. Shocked the house. People, when we left last year, they were going, oh, we'll believe it when we see it. And bam, there you go. We got some good starters. So look, that's 90% of the game. Why shouldn't we be all pumped? Let's wait and see what happens. Hopefully they stay injury free, which they won't. But that's why you get depth. That's why you have a good minor league system. That's why you sign a few extra veteran arms, a few Miguel Tejadas, a few guys like that to kind of, you know, get some depth, because you know you're going to need them. And for the first time since George Brett told me back in his winning days, can't remember having so many good starting pitchers on his team.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks so much again, Rex. We took you away from your wife and your family for about 45 minutes. So thank Mrs. Wonderdog for letting us have 45 minutes of your day, and I'll let you get back to her. And thank you very much for coming on with the Kansas City Baseball
Hey, guys,
Mall
my pleasure. And I know I'm a little long-winded, but just in time to sit down for dinner. She got it done. I appreciate it.
Well, there you go. And you can be long-winded with us anytime. It's best when a guest comes on and actually has something to say. So thank you very much, and have a great day.
Good night.
Bye-bye. We're going to go out to a quick break, and then we're going to come back and wrap up the show and talk a little bit about Rex Hudler. We'll be right back on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages. The Vault.
For nearly 2 years, the Royal Man Report and Kansas City Baseball Vault have brought you the fan's perspective on Royals baseball. You've joined us for nearly 2 years at kingsofkaufman.com/podcast or royalmanreport.com. Come celebrate at Kelly's Westport Inn on February 23rd, 2013, as we celebrate 2 great years of guests, Royals talk, and analysis with you, our fans. Party starts at 7, free cover before 10. See you there. And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We're still kind of laughing about giving Brian McGannon a hard time. Mike has wanted to do that since the beginning, and then he didn't do it. You didn't take the shot, Mike. I thought you were going to take the shot, but you
that was
you
my
follow-up,
but you took it from me.
Oh, well, you kind of paused. I didn't know if you were going to pass it, and I didn't want to let that one go. So I stole that one away, I guess. And
that's okay.
Rex knew it was coming. He ain't no fool, that's for sure.
It got done, and that's what I'm happy about.
So it'll be interesting to hear what Brian has to say after he hears that. And McGannon, a friend of the program, he's been on the show before, so hopefully he's got a good sense of humor about it. I think he will. So it's about 7:45. I think I'm going to let you guys head out of here pretty quick, but any closing thoughts on Rex Hudler, Mike?
Yeah, he's very long-winded, but I mean, you can't fight that passion, and you know, I know he gets kind of a bad rap because he does say some really goofy stuff, and I roll my eyes a lot too, but you know, you can't blame a guy for getting into the game, and even if he's a little weird about it.
That's kind of where I'm at with it, and you know, he's just got so much passion about everything, and when you start finding out about it, I mean, it's weird. Somebody called into 610 the last time he was on with Danny in Carrington, and the guy asked like a really personal question. He's having some trouble in his love life. Guy was breaking down and in tears on the air. I'd never seen anything like that on a sports radio show. But people, you know, they feel that with Rex. They feel a closeness to him, that he brings some sort of special spirit with him, and hopefully more fans can appreciate that. And I know 162 games of Rex Hudler can be a lot, but we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Jeff, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, kind of echoing the same sentiment. I think for me, like, I didn't necessarily have a huge problem with him right at first. You know, it was he's an announcer. You know, like, to be honest with you, you know, as much as we like Frank White as like the you know, kind of a Mount Rushmore type Kansas City sports hero, I never thought he was all that great as a you know, a TV guy. But my expectations are also not super high for that position. So the thing that I was really kind of waiting on with Hudler was, hey, you know, here he is, he's doing his thing, but I was waiting to kind of feel, is he genuine or not? I couldn't tell at first.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it took me about a month, maybe two, into the season. And then I said, you know, this dude is he's for real. He's genuine about everything he's saying and his passion for the game. And, you know, people who listen to this show know how much of a nerd I am when it comes to, you know, whether it's movies or TV or whatever. I get passionate about those things. And I can appreciate when someone gets passionate about the things that they love and they bring that with them every day. And that's absolutely something that I really, I think he's completely genuine, and I think it's awesome. So he's, you know, just a positive, passionate person. I definitely think that's pretty cool. So yeah, that's why I like Rex Hudler.
Michael Engel just typing that we had some breaking news coming in. Of course, we don't play this live, so it won't be breaking.
Yeah, it's not going to be breaking when you hear it.
But while we were on the phone with Rex Hudler, there was a big signing in the AL Central. Yeah. Michael Bourne has agreed to a contract with the Indians for a possible 5-year, $60 million deal. It's guaranteed 4-year, $48 million with a vesting option that could make it $60 million if he hits like 400 and some odd plate appearances, I believe, or 550 it might have been.
Yeah.
Is that what you had, Mike, or did you have something else?
No, that was it. That was it. Indians have been really busy this offseason, but we'll see how Michael Bourne does. I think he's a little overrated, but, you know, he's kind of a speed guy, and speed guys don't do a lot. You know, if they don't get on base, they don't do a lot. But still, it's better than Jeff Francoeur.
I mean,
stop retweeting Joe Sheehan. I cannot stand that guy.
If Bourne's going to go anywhere, then, you know, the Indians are probably anywhere in the AL Central, I should say. You know, the Indians are probably – could have been worse. You know, if he didn't go to Detroit or something like that and make them even better. So, I mean,
it's so weird.
Turn that Indians into a contender all of a sudden.
The Indians, it seems like every year they can't decide if they're going for it or if they're rebuilding. It's so weird. So they go and trade Shin-Soo Chu and go out and get Trevor Bauer. And, you know, he almost looks like he doesn't have a fit in rotation right now. And I don't know. It's going to be an interesting division for sure. I don't know.
Should be an exciting year for baseball, no matter what. It may not be the year that the Royals want, but it should be an exciting year for baseball. And maybe they are a third place team behind Cleveland and Detroit. I think they're still better than Cleveland, but I'm always the optimist. So we'll see what happens.
Yep.
What else you got? Anything, guys? Jeff?
No, just ready for this game to start. I'm ready for KU to get out of this crazy funk that's putting me in a funk.
Well, let's see. The Pecota projections came out from Baseball Prospectus. If you're a Royals fan, you might avert your eyes. They're not great, but they are just projections, so you never know. And I want to go back and take a look at how accurate they are. But they have the Royals winning 76 games in 2013, which feels a little low to me. Well, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but, you know.
And lots of times those big projections like that, they just push everything towards the middle. So
yeah, and Baseball Prospectus is fairly conservative. They don't have a lot of big breakout projections. So, you know, there's always guys who outperform and underperform, and they don't really have a lot of that extreme in there. So,
well, it's
very possible that, you know, that's just kind of your baseline, and you can deviate from that.
Yeah, I mean, if you just play the averages, they're going to be accurate probably about 85% of the time, so no use in really picking any huge breakouts, because that's the thing about baseball. It tends to regress towards the mean more often than not. So,
well, and we'll see what happens. Today, Yo said that Hotaver's going to win 15 games, so I'll be excited if Hotaver pitches 15 games. So,
if he gets that many decisions, 18. I'll be impressed.
That's where I should have said. If he gets 15 decisions, I'll be impressed, because that means that he didn't totally stink it up, or the Royals are just so in love with him they can't get past it. What's that, Jeff?
I said that it means that he made it past five innings at least 15 times, which I'm not certain he would.
That, or he got blown out in the first.
Yeah, he doesn't have to get that far in the loss.
That's true. That's a good point.
But on that note, I was started saying that I lost my train of thought. JJ Piccolo next week. We're real excited for that one. This will be we're going to try to do this about every year, I think, and about once a year it seems to be good with Piccolo. He's a great guy. I know a lot of people hate the front office, and I don't know how much control he has over
JJ's
moves, but JJ's brilliant. I mean, the guy is just a smart baseball guy, and he's so much fun to talk to. So it'll be good to talk to him, see how much he played into the
day. So
what's that?
He's going to be a GM someday, and probably someday soon.
A lot of people thought he was going to be the GM in Houston this year. So I guess we're Kevin Goldstein. It's a really good thing he wasn't. But we'll see what direction teams go. But it's not far away. JJ's going to be the boss someday somewhere. You know, who knows? Maybe they won't clean if things don't work out for Dayton Moore this year. Maybe they won't clean house and Piccolo will get a shot here. And he's smart. He understands minor league baseball really well. We don't know what he does with the major league level, but he'll definitely be. We'll definitely ask him the Will Myers question and how he played into that and what part of that he has and the process and everything. But, you know, he's not going to get caught off guard. You're not going to get some striking soundbite from him. It's not going to be that kind of interview. But you're going to get a lot of good baseball stuff. So we'll definitely be excited for that. And then the following week, still locking down the details, but Brian McCray, former Kansas City Royal, has taken over as an assistant baseball coach for the Park Pirates, and I do some work for Park, so I had an in there, and I've made a call, and we're supposed to have him in 2 weeks. So just before Park comes home for their first couple of games at home at Park there. If you've never been out to Park University, go out and check it out. Their baseball field is kind of set out there in Parkville, and it's really, really pretty where it's at. So I think it'd be a fun place to watch a ball game that'll get you going a little bit before we get into the regular season, because their first game is in March, so here at home. Their first game is like next Friday in Texas. So it'll be kind of cool to see Brian McCray, the coach, and it'll be interesting to talk to him as well. So I think on that note, we're going to get out of here. As always, stick around for the outtakes. Check out kingsofkaufman.com, echonetwork.com. Make sure you update all of your streaming. Check out the Facebook page, the one that has the Kelly's portion of it. That's the correct one. I'm getting rid of the other one. But check out that page for all of the information you need as far as changing your RSS feeds or your iTunes subscriptions. On iTunes, just look up Royals Podcast. It's there. It's already going. You'll see one of our shows and one of from the Pine Tar Press guys. Actually, you'll see all their shows because it was their feed initially. So check it out. But for Mike and Jeff, I'm Troy. Go Royals.
Hello, I can't come to the phone right now, but if you'll leave your name and a number, I'll get back to you when I can. Have a nice day.
Rex, it's Troy Olson from the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I'm going to give you a call right back. You're probably getting a call from an odd number. It's we call through Skype, so it comes up as a weird number, but I'll give you a minute and we'll call you right back. Thanks.
That might have been worth it to hear that message.
Definitely am. Where is Rex Hudler? That's the. Do you have the little the sound from Law and Order?
Dun, dun. I will in the edit.
Where is Rex Hudler?
No, I'm picky about what I throw in the outtakes. So.
The following Twitter users are dumb. At da 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 da. At der da der da der. Edit that out too.
I'm a cannon. That was awesome.
That was awesome.
He knew it was coming.
He did. He's no fool.